Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Booked with Shannon Delaney. I'm your hostess and the author of the 13 to Life series and the Weather Witch series. During my time as an author, I've gotten to meet many terrific people, and one of the sweetest authors I've met so far is with me tonight, Jennifer Mergia. Hello, Jen.
Hi, Shannon.
How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Good, good. Now, Jen is in Pennsylvania, and she has some wonderful experience that I want to make sure we share with you this evening. She has a bunch of books under her belt, including Angel Star, Lemniscate, The Bliss, and Between These Lines. But that's not all. Jen has something else pretty spectacular in the works, too, and she'll share some information about that with us tonight as well. And just so that you all know, we are going to be doing a contest. This is a continuation of the contest I started with our first interview here on Booked. And if you're an aspiring author, I want you to pay close attention. Of course, I want you to pay close attention to the entire interview because Jen's wonderful. But if you want to, possibly have the help of myself putting together your manuscript, getting your manuscript ready to be put in front of a very good publisher. What I want you to do is I want you to listen very closely to the questions and answers and all of the discussion that we have this evening. Feel free to call in, of course. And at the end, I'm going to ask a question from something that we've discussed here this evening. And I want you to write down your answer and send it to bookedwithshannon@gmail.com. We're going to do this throughout June and July. And then at the end of that, we're going to draw and come up with some possible people who I will be looking at the beginnings of their manuscripts. And I will help one person to put their things together so that in January of next year, they will be ready to present a manuscript. So make sure that you pay good attention this evening. Now, I have the pleasure of actually having read both Angel Star and Lemniscate. I actually loved Lemniscate enough that I blurbed it. But for listeners who aren't familiar with them, Jen, could you tell us a little bit about both of them? They were your debut series, weren't they?
Yes, they were, yes. Angel Star is my debut book, my young adult book, and it follows the story of Tegan McNeil, who is just your ordinary teenager, who happens to have a crush on the new boy at school, and he turns out to be her guardian angel, who has come to Earth for 8 days to warn her of a malicious plan from a dark angel. And the story continues in Lemniscate. And I just recently also published the prequel, which is a short novella, and it's called The Bliss.
I like the idea that you actually took the story and then went on and did The Bliss as well to sort of give the origin of the story's original conflict, correct?
Right, right, which is good versus evil, light versus dark. And the fun part was The Bliss is actually told from the point of view of my dark angel, Hadrian, who is quite a complex character. He was so much fun to write. So I'm really pleased that the story was told from his perspective.
I think it's great when we have that opportunity to take a character who may not have the best reputation initially, because Hadrian was kind of that bad boy. He was the bad temptation, very nice temptation, but bad temptation that Tegan was dealing with, and yet being able to hear from him more directly, that allows you as an author to experiment a bit and kind of get into his head even more.
Right, yes. And surprisingly, I had a number of readers who had contacted me, actually after Lemniscate had been released. They were completely swayed to the dark side. Hadrian was such a hateable person. He was so easy to hate in the first book. But by the time the second book came out, he had so many fans. And I was really pleased because he was like an onion to me. He had so many layers. And throughout the story, I just kept peeling it back little by little. And I'm really, really pleased that the readers picked up on who he really was. So it was a lot of fun.
That's terrific. Yes, absolutely. That's great. Now, when you started writing Angel Star, did you have a really good view on who Hadrian really was, or did he sort of come out of the shadows for you as the writing went on?
I had a good sense of who I wanted him to be, but no, with any story, my characters surprise me as I write them, and I'm a very eclectic writer. I don't do outlines. I kind of fly by the seat of my pants. So I like to be surprised as much as the readers. I had a good idea of who he was, who his character was. He did evolve throughout writing the story.
That's wonderful. Angel Star has been called a mesmerizing love story by Fantastic Book Reviews, and it definitely caught my attention. I greatly enjoyed it, and I was so happy when you asked me to read the second novel, too. And Sindelag, the author of Fairy Tale and Sleepless, said that she tore through Lemniscate breathless until the final thrilling battle between good and evil. I remember having a similar feeling. I was going through and going, oh my goodness, it's going to happen. Something big's going here. And it was terrific. So, yes, absolutely. You have to have that. So
yeah.
that was wonderful. Some authors don't really deliver, but you brought that through, and it just made it wonderful.
Thank you. I really wanted to portray that epic fight, the dark versus light, and you just... Everything is about balance. You can't have good without bad. It has to be two-sided to make sense. So, yeah.
That's very true. Now, when you were starting with the actual story and it was just sort of coming through in your brain, sort of simmering in there, where was your inspiration coming from initially? What did you draw from?
This is really funny because the idea hit me over the head one night when my husband was away on business, and I really had not planned on writing a young adult novel at all, let alone with this plot line. It was the notion of unconditional love and basically being in love with somebody who was sort of forbidden and untouchable, but yet they were a constant presence, and the thought of a guardian angel immediately came to mind because it just fit. You cannot see them, you cannot touch them, yet they are always there, always. And ironically, my first love before books was poetry. And I had written a number of poems in high school, even after, and I just kind of stashed them away. And it was just my thing, my fun thing, my escape. And I forgot about them. And here, I never realized, but when I started writing Angel Star, I had already laid the foundation with these poems years ago. And I'm pulling out these stories in these little blurbs, in these little poem pieces, and realizing that I think I had started writing this book a long time ago. And it just kind of, the inspiration was really just emotions, just growing up and just finding yourself and trying to find your path, knowing what's right, knowing what's wrong, trying to steer yourself along the way, and just taking bits and pieces of things that I had written so long ago and incorporating them into something fresh. So.
And that's one of the things that makes what we do as young adult authors so wonderful, being able to go back and revisit things and then realize that we all have so many powerful similarities between us. There are so many similar circumstances, similar experiences as we're growing up, whether they're good or they're bad. And then you get to put this wonderful paranormal spin on it and really raise some questions about what would you do?
Right.
And I think that helps to make it even more powerful as a story, because anytime you can get those readers to go, well, if I was her, if I was Tegan, what would I do? I think that's a wonderful thing. Now, you do have a couple of things that you are going to be reading for us this evening.
Great.
And would you like to read a snippet of one? Okay.
Sure.
Introduce us.
Okay. This is an excerpt from Lemniscat. And just as some background, I just really feel that there's, I know I have a lot of darkness in my plot. there's something about the world we live in that I believe. And I know people believe in heaven, and I know people believe in hell, and they believe that they are two distinct places. And without getting too spiritual or religious or anything, I kind of feel, I truly believe in tests. And I feel that where we live now is the biggest test of all. And if we can say that Earth is probably hell, I would probably agree. I mean, when you think about it, there's murder, there's horror, there's people starving, children being bullied, people being kidnapped. It's just terrible. So that was a foundation for the story as well, to see that there's a lot of hell here on Earth. And there's also the notion of fear coming from the inside out. There's an old age belief that if you open yourself to something that is dark, it can claim you. And in this particular excerpt, one of my characters, whose name is Bryn, she's physically present, but she's somewhere else in her head. And I'll just kind of read this to you. Tegan and Gareth, who is her guardian angel, and Hadrian, who's the dark angel, are in a tunnel beneath the foundation of a church. And Bryn has made a deal with Lucifer. She had lost her mother, and she was promised that she could have something very precious given back to her. So she's kind of lost somewhere inside her head between the reality that she knows and the promises that she's been given. So I'll just read a little bit to you. I turned my head back and closed my eyes, steeling myself, knowing I had to let him in. Slowly, I began to empty my mind, allowing tendrils of thoughts into my subconscious. Each thought, each fear, was like a whisper, a thread of smoke that wove through my head, snaking around to find the precise point where I could allow it to fester and take shape, to give it permission to become real. I pictured everything that tempted me, hoping it would draw Lucifer closer. Desperately, I wanted to retreat deeper inside the safety of myself, to be away from the thoughts, the memories, but I allowed them to come full force. I felt a presence near me, not on the outside of my body, where I knew Hadrian and Gareth were keeping a close watch on me, but here, within me. It was sharing the same space, and so I continued. I felt over and over again the fear of being in the closet with Ryan. I pictured hell all around me, bidding it to come out of hiding and find me. I made myself hear Bryn and her years of taunting, of making me feel worthless and shameful for even being on the same planet as her. And then I made contact, and someone, something, broke through and touched me. So, my
wonderful
little creepy excerpt.
Yeah, that's great. Great. Now, when you finished putting those two books together and then you did the novella,
right,
at that point, did you say to yourself, okay, I need to set this world aside and try something completely different? Or what did you think? Because I look at Between These Lines, which Charlotte Bernardo of Sirens and Blonde Ops said is a touching strike-at-your-heart story, and that's about as good as a blurb gets right there. And I'm not sure, is there paranormal in there?
There's a touch of it, but I...
okay.
That's part of the wow moment.
okay, well then we won't talk about that part. But you have a totally different setting, correct?
I do, yes. It's more of a contemporary world. It takes place in a prep school where there is a social war. And it's It's told in alternating point of views between Chase Mittman and Evie Cunningham. And Chase is, he's quite a loner. And he's kind of had a crush on Evie from afar. And Evie is the beautiful, smart girl who everyone adores. But she's taken by her a very controlling boyfriend who happens to be the headmaster's nephew. And he also rules the school. So, yeah, they actually find themselves paired together for a social communications project. And as they work together, they realize how much alike they are, and then they begin falling for each other. But it comes with some very serious consequences.
Wow.
And actually, these two worlds, my Angel Star world and the Between These Lines world, they collided a little bit because I actually wrote Between These Lines before I wrote The Bliss.
Okay.
So, yeah, they kind of hopped realms a little bit. So,
now,
do you
reference the other? You know, how are you actually connecting them without giving us, you know, giving away anything? What sorts of things are actually connecting these two worlds then? Because I recently saw this chart that showed Stephen King's books and how many times he referenced certain towns in different books that you might not have expected those things to show up in, but they were all from his world. So how did you do it?
How did I connect Between These Lines with the Angel Star
yes.
series?
Yes.
Honestly, they're very, very different from each other. The way I probably connected was that they're both in a school setting. I really wanted to kind of take it a step further with bullying, and sending a message about that. In the Angel series, Brit Pegan, and I really wanted to tell Between These Lines from a boy's point of view and how he's bullied and how he handles it, and just kind of the whole social network and the web between students who are more popular and students who are not, and how they really are connected, and how through a certain chain of events that they can, their eyes are opened and they really see there is no difference. So.
And bullying is a very important topic. We're seeing a lot more authors dealing with this, and most of them dealing with it in a very strong and positive way, and a way that hopefully will empower young readers, because I believe it is pretty much a universal situation that we wind up seeing in today's schools and in society outside of school, unfortunately, as well. So
right.
I'm glad that you're addressing that.
Right. I think there's another, as far as connection, again, between the two series, even though they are quite different, there's that notion, again, of fear and using a fear to make yourself stronger, whether you're being bullied or whether it's something that's paranormal or whatever, but it's definitely going to make you stronger.
Good. So using the conflict to actually make yourself perhaps a little closer to being the hero that you could be.
Right.
Wonderful. Now, I want to make sure that listeners who are actually with us right now know that they are able to call in. Our call-in number is the same one as last time. It's 347-633-9609. So if you have any questions, or if you're a fan of Jennifer's and you want to say something to her, you're certainly welcome to give us a call. Let us know what you're curious about. Talk to her. Ask her questions. This is time that you guys have to actually connect with her, too, in case you don't actually get to meet her at any of her events or any of those sorts of things. And sometimes being able to talk to an author voice to voice, obviously not face to face, is a really good thing. So feel free to call in 347-633-9609. Now, Jen, you also have a reading for us from Between These Lines, correct?
Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm. All right. Are you ready to hit us with that?
I think so. Let me just find, I have my Nook with me.
Okay, there you go.
I have it. We're good. Okay. Now, this particular piece is in the chapter that's told by Chase, my hero. Mm-hmm. Chase actually has some dark secrets, and very, very few people know about it. It's something that he keeps hidden, and if it ever got out, it's definitely good reason to allow somebody to pick on him, or at least to see him differently. So I'll just read this and you'll get to know him a little bit better.
Good.
I dropped my heavy backpack on the floor and launched myself onto the bed, flopping down face first to breathe in the clean smell of fabric softener trapped between the fibers of the comforter. I turned my head after a few minutes and faced my desk. The brown corkboard that hung above, was plastered with squares of newspaper articles, some yellowed, some still gray and white, but mostly yellow. I hopped off the bed, walked over to the corkboard, and straightened a clipping that had curled at the edges long ago. Boy loses parents in horrific crash, released a family while recovering. Aunt Claudie said it was a miracle, said they died instantly. Only in that instant, I may as well have died too. A familiar feeling crept over me, of being caught between remembering and forgetting. Glimpses whispered when I least expected them, the way my mom's eyes looked on a rainy day, my dad's aftershave in the morning when I woke for school. But as quickly as the memories teased me, they disappeared, replaced by questions that tangled in and out of my brain. My eyes drifted toward the lanky figure in the mirror across my room. Regulation crisp white Oxford, tails out, and navy trousers hung on my frame. I felt the thin line of sweat trickle down my back as I unbuttoned my shirt, paring down to the white tee beneath. My fingers traced the long scar that began in the crook of my left elbow and rippled its way up to my shoulder, fanning out into a curving pink mass at my chest. Just like the last moments I spent with my parents, I couldn't seem to remember the fire that spared me. My dad's Toyota flipped on the wet road, leaving my mom pinned beneath it, and he sprawled 40 yards from the wreckage. They found me in a puddle directly beneath the car. I was wet. I was alive. But the fire had already made its mark. When I woke up in the trauma unit at the hospital, it was Aunt Claudie's tear-stained face that met mine instead of my parents. I asked if I could still go to the birthday party, the one we were headed to. Everyone was going to be there. Aunt Claudie broke down and cried against the scratchy blankets on the bed while I numbly fidgeted with the transparent tube that dripped a slow liquid into my veins and stared at the walls. All I knew was what I was going to miss, Shane Whitley's 11th birthday party, and then it sank in. I'd lost my parents forever. In the months after the accident, I contemplated my place in the world and quickly learned how mean kids could be. They don't understand sorrow. They certainly don't understand grief, not the, oh, I'll get over it tomorrow kind, but the variety that screams earth-shattering. I reached into my pocket, pulled out the notes I had received today, and tossed them on top of my dresser. Even if Evie had slipped the invite into my locker, it wouldn't change how I felt about Shane and the others. It couldn't make them my friends. Not then, not now, not ever.
Very powerful. Very good. So we have a brand new hero. We have a brand new setting. And, of course, significant teenage drama and angst, which I think is pretty much the preset for teenagers.
Yeah.
And now you've got that one that you did.
Right.
And when did that one release?
Between These Lines just released April 1st of this year.
Wonderful. Great.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Yep.
So that's very recent. And I understand that you have wonderful news about a brand new project.
I do.
That will be seen September of 2014.
Yes. Yes.
All right. Tell us about that, Jen.
Oh, I'm so excited. This is a long time coming. the story, it's still young adult, and it's called The Hedge Witch, and it's going to be published through Spencer Hill Press, which I'm very excited about because they absolutely rock. They're wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
And it is a 17th century Bavarian witch mystery. So we're going the opposite end of the spectrum of what I've written before.
That's great.
It's absolutely my pride and joy, and I'm very excited about it.
I am very familiar with the term hedge witch and There's some odd stories in my family's background that actually goes back to some of that. But
I do.
you see, well, and we grew up in a sort of similar area, so
yeah.
Yes, that was something that you definitely ran into.
Right.
Now, when you were sitting down and this idea came to you, or standing up, however this happens, at what moment did you go, Bavarian hedge witch?
Well, I'm a research queen. I love mm-hmm. research. I could sit at the computer all day and go to the library and just pick out books. I'm constantly searching for something new. However, this particular story really hits home for me because my mother's side is German. And we come from a town called Baden-Württemberg in Germany, which is on the outskirts of Bavaria, of the Black Forest.
Mm-hmm.
We did trace my heritage back to that particular area. And what I was really excited about is that when you read stories that have to do with witches or inquisitions or witch hunts, you really only hear about Salem or you hear about England. However, it originated in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Not too far from where my family hails from is a town of Bamberg, which is one of the very, very first recorded cities of witch hunts in the 1600s. They actually prosecuted about 30 to 40,000 women and children.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very, very dark, dark time. But not many stories have that German background to it. So I was really excited to kind of dig into my own family's heritage and learn where this is from. And I've always felt a very strong tug towards stories with witches, anything with Wicca, just the whole idea of the burning times. And so this was really a lot of fun to dive into. So,
now, have you had the opportunity to go back to the area where your family came from all those many, many years ago?
No, I have not. I would love to visit one day. I do have an aunt that lives in Berlin, but she's on my father's side. But no, I've never been to Germany, but I would love to see it one day.
Definitely, when you decide to go, let me know because
I'll take you along. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
I actually had the opportunity. I went for 11 wonderful days. Was hosted by a couple that lived in Stuttgart because my family originates from the area of Baden-Baden,
mm-hmm.
and we are more of that strange Celtic side of the Germanic background,
right.
and also not far from the Black Forest. So I absolutely understand, and now I definitely want to read this book when it comes out.
That's why we get along so well.
So definitely let me know if you need someone to give it a look-see, because now I'm very, very curious.
This book is really fun to write. It's actually the story of a girl named Rune, and I'm not going to tell too much of it, but just a quick blurb. It's about a girl who is just about to turn 16, and she hears the whispers of her dead mother who had been burned at the stake in the nearby village.
Ah, interesting.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I'm definitely gonna. I'll want to look into this one. That's cool. Very good. Now, you've been published traditionally, non-traditionally. Can you talk to us a little bit about the experience with both of those? Because I know that listeners who are tuning in, they have different ideas of what it's like to be traditionally published and what it's like to be published non-traditionally, which I think is a very, very broad sort of statement if you're published non-traditionally, of course. So
right.
if you could tell us a little bit about what your experience has been and what you've taken away from that comparison, because I see that there's value to both of these things.
Right.
And I like to hear what other people have to say about it, too.
Okay. My first series, the Angel Star series, is published traditionally. It's with a small house called Lands Atlantic Publishing.
Mm-hmm.
Having wanted to be an author for quite a while, my thoughts were always old school, that I needed an agent, I needed to be published with a traditional house, to therefore see my book on a shelf in a brick-and-mortar store, to sort of feel that what I had written held merit. But the industry has really evolved, and my entire publishing journey has been right smack in the middle of it. So my frame of what I used to think has completely changed, and it's amazing. For someone who wants to get published, there are just so many different ways to get your book into the hands of readers. Angel Star, like I said, was published traditionally. I did not have literary representation at that time. I had done everything myself. I had queried a number of agents and a number of editors who accepted unsolicited manuscripts. Had the rejections, really kind of just kept pushing and pushing. You know, the biggest thing is having patience and really pushing for what you want. And I know authors often say that until they're blue in the face when they give advice, but it is absolutely true. If you want this, you have to keep going, and you have to keep asking, and you have to find that needle in a haystack that will fall in love with your story and champion you. And once you find that one person, it does not matter how many rejections you had, because it's kind of like labor pains. It just all goes away.
I agree.
Yeah, absolutely. I was really, really, I don't know if it was luck, but Lands Atlantic happened to be a brand new publisher. I was a brand new author, and they believed in me as much as I believed in their mission statement, and I felt that we were the perfect fit to take baby steps together. And then it's human nature to want to take the next step. You're never quite happy with what you have. You want more, and you want more, and you want more. So obviously my next step was, let's write another book. Let's see if I can try to sign with an agent. And that journey was just as long and tedious, rejection. But I did end up, right after I wrote Between These Lines, I have an amazing agent who I just love her to death. She liked the story. I signed with her, and she's just stood by me.
You have to actually name your agent now that you've said all these wonderful things about her.
Amanda Liedeke, and she's with McGregor Literary.
Good.
She's a dynamo. She's very young. She's very fun. When I talk with her, email her, I don't feel like we're discussing business. I feel like I'm talking to a friend, and I think that really makes a big deal. She's just fabulous. She really is. We shopped Between These Lines for a while, and for whatever reason, it just did not sell. But she stood behind my book, and she believed in my story enough to help steer me in a non-traditional way of publishing, so which brings me to telling you about Playlist Fiction. Playlist Fiction is a group of authors, including myself, who are represented by McGregor Lit. And like I said, for whatever reason, our books did not sell, whether there was something similar in production or trends in the market. But we banded together, and we created Playlist Fiction, and we self-published our books and made an e-book line.
Very cool. Now, and I think this is something that people need to understand. If you're not an author and you haven't gone through this sort of blooding sort of process that is us submitting to different publishers or different agents, and it can be really a heart-wrenching sort of situation depending on how things go. I think what a lot of aspiring authors don't understand is you can find that you're getting rejected because of those things that you said, the
right.
timing in the marketplace,
right.
or someone already has something somewhat similar in production,
right.
or they think that what they have is similar compared to what you've presented in a synopsis. And so as a result, it doesn't necessarily mean a thing as far as the writing or the story's concept. A lot of it comes down to luck and timing, and
yes.
those are very, very brutal parts of this industry.
Yes, I often feel that if you sell a book, you've won the literary lottery. It depends on whose desk your manuscript lands on, who happens to read it, who happens to like it. It also depends on the list that they present
yes.
to booksellers. If there is something remotely similar already in that catalog that they show to, like, Barnes & Nobles or wherever, they're not going to look at your book, unfortunately.
It's right.
It's just too close to something else. It has to stand out to make that list.
And that's one of the other things. Aspiring authors, if you're listening in, keep in mind that a lot of publishers actually have a set number of books or a set estimation of how many of each genre they want to actually produce during each quarter of the year.
Right.
So they're looking ahead by usually about a year to 2 years in production. And if they have slots filled, it may not be a reflection of your talent at all. It, again,
right.
is, like you said, this time maybe you didn't win the literary lottery, but next time, hey, roll the dice again. You never know what's going to happen.
Exactly.
So,
and it's so hard not to take it personally because as an author, you put sometimes years into creating this one book, and there's so much of yourself and your soul in this story, and it's very, very hard not to take it personally. But I think that for anyone who is an aspiring writer, they need to understand that it is not you, and it is not your work. It's just circumstance.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And I think if you can get to that point where you understand that there is a lot more going on than what you are actually trying to produce and your story, that there are so many things that are simply outside the realm of your control, I think as an author that's going to bring you to a point of peace too.
Right.
Because
right.
you can't, you simply cannot force people to publish your work. Either it
yeah.
works, it comes there at the right time. I mean, I know that I got very lucky, but I know a lot of people who went many, many more years. And honestly, I would have to say some of them have far better stories, you know, stories that I just absolutely love to pieces, but they had to persevere so much longer than I did simply because, for once, timing worked for me.
Right,
so,
right.
I think it's terrific that you guys banded together and decided to go in this much more empowering sort of way, because now I'm guessing that you have the ability to actually determine when you're going to get your books out there, so you can kind of schedule things yourself.
Right. Right.
And that...
yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
That can be a very... Sorry. That can be a very powerful thing, too, because you can watch what's happening in the market, and you can kind of say, you know what? This story is really going to speak to people around this time, so
right.
we need to make sure that it pops up around Halloween or around this event, or it gives you so many more opportunities, I think, sometimes when you do these more independent moves.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's
right.
wonderful that you guys did that.
Thank you.
And
Thank
who else is...
Who else
Go
is
ahead.
In Playlist Fiction?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. I consider them my writing sisters. It is just serendipity that we are together. It's the McGregor Literary Gods truly blessed us in putting us together. Laura Anderson Kirk and Laura Smith, Rajdeep Paulus, and Stephanie Morrell, and myself. And we all write contemporary pieces that deal with very strong issues. If you visit our website, it's www.playlistfiction.com.
Mm-hmm.
all of our books are listed there. You can download our books there. Like I said, we're ebooks. We're available on Kindle. We're available on Nook. You can go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Smashwords. You can download directly from the website. But we really touch on stories that are really close to the heart, stories that teens go through. Like, for example, my story, Between These Lines, has bullying. It has, you know, like the social networking with kids. There's a story about abuse. There's some with some more Christian background. It's just, the stories are beautiful. They really are. They're just bittersweet, beautiful stories. And we all cross-promote one another. And like I said, right. I just really, really feel that we're together for a reason. And we all blog. Okay. We have a blogging schedule. So we are always online.
Good, good.
Playlist also has a Twitter page. It also has a Facebook page. We're on Pinterest. So we can give you some visual inspiration towards our stories. But, yeah, it's a lot of fun. And it's fun being in control of your own book, which kind of ties into going the non-traditional route and the pros and cons to this. I'm enjoying being behind the scenes of
right.
picking out my cover design, working closely with a designer, choosing my own editor, and going through and just really seeing what it takes to produce a book instead of sitting back and waiting for someone else to do it. so it's really quite interesting being on this side of it. So as far as personally, I like both. I like both traditional and non-traditional. There's such a rise in indie publishing right now. In fact, a very
yes.
good friend of mine said that just about every single book she has read this year has been an indie book. It's just amazing with the bookstores closing and all of the online availability that self-publishing is no longer seen as a lowly, you know, like a low way to get your book out there.
Right, right. It used to be very much
stigma.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And we're starting to see that really shift.
Yes, it's really shifting, which is kind of interesting because, like I said, I had always been old school and really thought, well, I need an agent, I need a publisher. This is the only way my book can get out. But it's changing. The publishing industry is changing so much that it's allowing room for indie publishers. And it's wonderful because there are so many writers who are just fabulous and their stories are getting out. And that's what it's all about.
I agree. I absolutely agree.
The reader can't, no matter how you do it.
Now, let's go back in time a little bit here. Do you remember what it was that got you started with writing? You mentioned you got into poetry and you kind of started there. But
yep.
when and why did you suddenly go, you know what, I want to do some of this? What was it that took you down that road?
Writing in general or writing young adult?
Yeah.
Writing in general. I just always loved to make up stories. I was always the little girl who made up plays in my neighborhood. I would take out a electric typewriter on an extension cord and sit on my sidewalk. and I was the bossy little girl that said, you know, you're going to be this person and this is what you're going to say. And now I get to do it and really do it with my characters in my head. But yeah, I've always had a very, very strong imagination. It's just something I loved. I always loved reading and creating my own worlds. And I grew up as an only child and I really kind of had to be creative in what I did and you know, fill my time. And I was a voracious reader. And then I got married and I had two wonderful children, and my reading time just evaporated. And by the time I was ready to pick up another book, I felt out of the loop. I remember walking around Barnes & Noble and just feeling just so disconnected with what was out in the market, and I felt lost. And this leads into why I write young adult now. But I walked by an aisle, and there was a gorgeous cover that caught my eye. And it was A Certain Slant of Light by Laura Whitcomb, and it was that haunting image of the girl in the bathtub. And I was like, oh, teen book section, right. Why am I looking at this? But I picked it up, and I was like, okay, I have to get this. I read the book in a day. The next day, I went back to Barnes & Noble's, and here I was like the crazy lady walking up and down the aisles just pulling books off the shelves. And I felt like I had to make up a story that I was buying them for my nieces, not myself, because why would an adult be in the, you know, the young adult section?
Right,
you know,
but it's such a natural thing.
I was so hooked because there's something about the rush that you feel as an adult reading a young adult story. It just takes you back to that impressionable time period that you had growing up. And you see yourself in the characters that you read about and in their situations. You're like, oh my gosh, I did this. I was that girl in the cafeteria, or I had the crush on this boy. And you know, I was so giddy almost that I had fallen in love with this genre, and it inspired me to write all over again. And I decided, you know what, let's just reconnect with who I used to be, the person that I had felt that I somehow lost, you know, becoming a mom and a new person. And I picked up writing again, and it's been the love of my life ever since. So.
That's great. Now, we have a question from one of my Facebook followers. This is from Sarah. She says, my question would be to both of you, and by the way, she's doing it this way because she's got the kids right now, and so there's a little bit of tears from the three-year-old and, you know, a little bit of that mommy drama. So she didn't want to call in and let us hear all that. So she asked, though, my question would be to both of you, how long do you guys take on research for these books set in 17th century and other late time periods? So how long when you were, because, I mean, you're still in the process of working on Hedgewitch, right?
Well, the Hedgewitch is complete. It's in the editing phase right now.
Okay. Okay. All right.
Yeah, I finished my first round of edits and passed that along to my editor. I spent a couple months, probably, and it could have gone longer only because I enjoy researching so much.
I spent
probably a good 2 to 3 months. But intermittent research, because I would look up what I'm wanted to learn about. Like, for example, there's this whole big scene about mushrooms in the story. And I, you know, you have to find out, do they grow in Bavaria? Are they from the Black Forest? You have to make it authentic. And then looking up poisonous effects, and so it can get very drawn out. I told you I have a dark side. But I'd say about 3 months or so, for me anyway.
That's great. That's good. And I tend to agree with you as far as especially the idea that we kind of do it in pieces. As we realize there's a need, as a character shows up and kind of goes, oh, by the way, this is going to happen. Or as you realize there's something unique about that setting or that time period that people may not understand immediately, you kind of have to go in that direction. With the Weather Witch series, I wound up incorporating a bunch of music, and I wanted to make sure that most of the music that I was referencing, the things that were not written by Wade Mulvihill, who's done a wonderful job, the things that I was referencing, though, I wanted to make sure fit in with that time period. So there would be entire days where I just sat Googling popular songs of the 1840s and, you know, doing all of that and then checking out the literature of the 1840s and making sure that I had my politics correct. And then I threw those out the window and things like that. But I think that's the research. I totally understand the addiction to that because there's such an amazing wealth of knowledge, especially available now. So, and we don't ever have to change out of our pajamas, Jen. It's amazing.
I know. You could have a bad hair day and just become so much smarter by...
That's right. That's right. You don't have to actually interact with real humans anymore.
Right.
You can learn everything online, but always double check anything on Wikipedia, kids.
Absolutely.
Just seriously. Okay.
Oh.
Oh, my goodness. So, now, was there anybody who actually was responsible for sort of helping to encourage you towards writing? You said you were an only child, you got to sit outside and you were doing all of this. Were your parents involved in something creative? Did they say, go ahead, Jen, take the electric typewriter out there?
Actually, I come from divorced parents, and they were both artists. My dad
okay.
is an artist. My mother's very artistic. My mom designed for a while, and they've just always encouraged me, my mother especially, just to be as creative as I can be. And just always, I've just always been 100% supported behind, you know, by my family.
That's good.
And then later on, you know, after, like I said, when I kind of reconnected with writing again, my husband is probably the biggest support that I have. He's just fabulous. You know, he stands behind me.
I think that's so very important in what we do, having someone that you know really has your back and really kind of goes, okay, you know, there'll be that listening ear or the shoulder to cry on or,
right,
you know, whatever you
right.
need.
And
I think that definitely makes a difference in how successful different creative personalities are. Because
absolutely.
If you go down the road without having any support, it can be very, very daunting.
Right.
So...
Writing, especially
now,
writing, it's a solitary profession. You know,
it is.
It's not like you get up and go to work and you get to socialize with everyone and go out to lunch. You were by yourself writing, and you're often alone in these worlds in your head. And to really have the support of someone else who cannot open a door and see what you're going through, that means
right.
a lot. So, yeah.
That does. That does. That's great. Now, when you aren't doing your writing and all of that stuff, you also have been very supportive of other authors and very giving towards other readers and people of all sorts. And you actually founded this great event that I was fortunate enough to be part of. And it's
yes.
YA Fest.
Yes.
Now, we're having another YA Fest next year, correct?
Yes, April 19th of 2014.
All right. Tell us a little bit about it, because... all of it that I, you know, I was there and I loved it. It was set up really well. There
yeah.
were terrific authors. There was significant craziness going on. So it was a
it
very
was a
lively
lot of
event.
it
really
was.
It was terrific.
Yes.
So
let me give you some background. I'm very good friends with Finn Balog. And she and I have beta read for each other. I talk to her probably every single day.
Cool.
She and I seem to share the same brain. And I had signed my books at PAYA, which is Bringing YA to PA in
right.
Westchester. And I remember going home and emailing Finn and saying, oh gosh, I really wish we could do that, something similar in the Lehigh Valley. Ironically, Finn was getting ready to do the Rochester Teen Festival. And she's like, you know, yes, absolutely. We need to do something like that. And she and I don't live very far from each other. We're not neighbors, but we're not very far. So we decided, you know, what better place to do it than a library. And I have volunteered at my local library for years. It's my home away from home. I took my children to the Palmer Library for story time. I approached them. They loved the idea, and YA Fest was born. So we do plan on having our second YA Fest on Saturday, April 19th of 2014. We have increased the number of authors to 50.
Wow. Oh, my goodness.
35,
wow.
And we are maxed out.
Yeah.
I have a waiting list. We have
oh.
The response is just phenomenal. We have middle grade now. We have young
oh,
adults. And it is going to be as spectacular, if not more, than last year. We will also have Josh Burke with Master Burke Theater once again.
That was so much fun.
He's hilarious. He's just so much fun. Natalie Zaman will be doing tarot readings.
Good.
We will be having raffle baskets, our teen writing contest, and books will be sold on site with Harleysville Bookstore once again.
So they were really wonderful.
Oh, they're fantastic. Yeah, absolutely fantastic. We're actually also working with Judith's Reading Room and Bookham New Work to have them represented there as well, to give them a table and receive donations from them. And I'm also working with some bloggers to help spread the word on their sites as well. So, but it's really about connecting with teens and reading and with the library and allowing them to see the talent that we have in and around the Lehigh Valley. There are so many amazing authors from my area, Josh Burke, Sin, Molly Cochran, You're Not Too Far Away, Tiffany Schmidt. There are just so many amazing writers, and they're all so close that we can get together and have fun once a year and do this. So we're really looking forward to it.
And I've got to say, everything was put together very, very well. You had wonderful staff members who were helping out. You just had everything just... You had it all together, though. It was great. And it was definitely one that I kind of did that mental checklist of, yes, I want to come back here. You know, so I have to say, the fact that you're expanding it and everything, it's going to be even more awesome, and I'm very much looking forward to it. So that's
really
great.
Looking forward to having you back. Absolutely. I did invite everyone who was there last year, obviously, get first dibs at coming back. And I think, with the exception of Jonathan Mayberry, because he's moving, everyone's coming back. And if they have not gotten back to me yet, there's that that potential that they will. They've kind of given me the heads up that, yes, I really want to, but I need to check my schedule. So everyone really wants to come back. So
that's great.
As it was a success. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. When you have that sort of response, that just speaks volumes about the event. That's great. Now, Jen, we're winding up our time here on Booked. What is one bit of advice that you'd like to give aspiring authors who are listening?
Oh, goodness. Does it have to be only one?
Now go for it.
Okay. Well, obviously, really, you need to have some patience, develop a thick skin, and really keep writing. This is your passion. Authors are, this is their life. They write, they create. And the reason why the stories turn out so well and so wonderfully is because while you're writing, there's no pressure. So the one piece of advice that I could give you is just keep on writing. Don't even think about the future. Do not write to get published. Write because you want to write, that you have a story to tell. You don't need the pressure of who's going to like it, who's going to hate it, is it going to sell, who's going to review it. You need to push all that aside and write the story that's inside you.
That's great. Great. Now, how can listeners find you online?
Oh, I'm very accessible. I'm kind of all over the place. My website is www.jennifermergia.com. I am on Facebook. I also have a separate Angel Star Facebook page. I'm on Twitter. My Twitter handle is @JenniferMergia. You can also find me with playlistfiction.com. I am on Pinterest. You can go to yafest.blogspot.com and find out information about YA Fest, and I will soon list all the authors who will be coming to the next one. I'm pretty much online. You can just Google me. I'm also on Goodreads.
Great. Yeah. You're everywhere. That's terrific. Well, thank you to everyone who's listened in this evening. I wanted to give you the question for that contest. Remember to send your answer to bookedwithshannon@gmail.com. The question is, what was Jen Mergia's first novel? send me the name of that first novel at bookedwithshannon@gmail.com, and I will get back to you and see who's moving on with us. This has been Booked with Shannon Delaney. I've been very happy to be your hostess this evening, and please come back and join us July the 2nd when I have Beth Felbaum here, and Beth will be talking about her novels, which deal with some very heavy and heart-wrenching topics, and our contemporary fiction. So please tune in with us then. Thank you again, Jen, for being here with us tonight.
Thank you.
And take care, everyone. Good night.